These are eggs. Quick whisk, no risk, protein punch, power lunch, bake for dinner, easy winner, fed the lot, hit the spot, eggs. And why pick up more eggs when you're shopping? Because there are more ways to enjoy them. Like bacon and mushroom fried rice with poached eggs, delicious sautéed potatoes with spinach and eggs, or everyone's favourite, a simple cheese omelette for lunch. So versatile, so nourishing. And always choose eggs with a Board Bia quality mark for the highest standards verified at every stage. Eggs. Crack on.
Yeah, having my head shoved into the steps of the Ulster Bank in Ranelagh, cold butt of a gun put into the back of your skull, that's a moment where you go, okay, yeah, I think this one's up.
How does a high-flying academic become one of Ireland's most prolific bank robbers?
What I would see as the most important part of this still lies open.
I'm Not Here to Hurt You, a brand new series from the award-winning team behind the Indo Daily.
That November day, that's where it all begins.
Out now, wherever you get your podcasts.
On this week's Big Tech Show, how will the latest developments in artificial intelligence affect your life? Will you get new powerful personal assistants? Are you in danger of something terrible happening? We explain what's going on.
Just a couple of weeks ago, Anthropic, which is OpenAI competitor, their startup lab, actually founded by former OpenAI employees, they actually eclipsed GPT-4 only just a couple of weeks ago with their latest model, and the internet went crazy. This is just better than GPT-4 at everything. So OpenAI had to respond to that.
The Big Tech Show, available on all podcast platforms.
This is an Irish Independent podcast.
Ireland could not have asked for a better start to the 2024 Six Nations after taking 5 points from five in Marseille on Friday night. Furthermore, they made history with their biggest ever win in France, and it sets Andy Farrell's men up for another crack at a Grand Slam. Welcome to the latest Left Wing podcast. Will Slattery here with you. Plenty to discuss tonight, and I'm delighted to be joined in studio by Cian Tracy and Luke Fitzgerald for our chat. And Cian, I'll go to you first. You got to go to Marseille, obviously a memorable occasion, I'm sure. Atmosphere-wise, it looked brilliant on TV, but the performance, I don't think anyone was expecting. Although Luke, to be fair to him, did tip an Irish win. As you said before we started, I don't think you thought it would be by that much. But
that was, I was off air on that. That was not to be quoted.
I broke your confidence. But for you, Cian, what was the standout element, you know, the backbone of that victory? So many things to choose from, but ultimately, what do you think drove Ireland to such a comprehensive and dominant victory?
It was an amazing occasion, like you said, Will. I mean, real novelty, the fact that it wasn't in Paris. I was at the Champions Cup final a couple of years ago, Leinster-La Rochelle, and that was such a great occasion too. But this felt a little bit different. You know, like even we walked from the stadium, it's about an hour outside this kind of city centre, and we walked and you could see all along the walk, all the bars were absolutely packed. You know, the fact it was in the south of France. So like it felt like, I was making this point in the piece I did after match, it felt like someone had just pressed restart on the World Cup. It felt like we were just transported back into the World Cup, had that very similar feel, you know, big opening night. My own sort of night got off to a false start because when I got to the Stade Velodrome and went to pick up my accreditation, my name was nowhere to be seen. Oh, no. And one of my fellow colleagues said, my hotel is like 20 minutes away if you need to work in my bedroom. And I was going, This cannot happen. I cannot report on this in a hotel room, but I was very fearful because the amount of red letter that tape that the French usually like. So, but I had all the emails to prove it, and about 45 minutes later, I eventually got in. But like I was sweating. So,
how was your pigeon French? Was it?
It's okay. Yeah. Petit Français got me by, but they didn't have much English. The guys in the door, and you know, you know what I mean. The French are real like strict at times when it comes to rules. But if I had missed what unfolded, it would have made it even worse. So yeah, the occasion was absolutely magic. Not quite as many Irish people there. I think they were guessing around 7,000 to 10,000 people. It wasn't like the 40,000-50,000 people that we had at the World Cup, but that made it, I think, even better, the fact that Ireland went and were able to beat France there. The rendition of La Marseillaise was like nothing I've ever experienced before. They cut it off halfway through and the crowd sang it. And Ireland's ability to silence that crowd from so early on, I think, is what really set the platform for what was an incredible victory. I know Luke had the foresight to predict an Irish win, but I don't think anyone saw how comprehensive the victory was in the end. I know, you know, we get on to touching it. The red card did obviously play into it, but I think Ireland were a far better team in terms of, yeah, like from 1 to 15 really, or 1 to 14 in France's case. France looked like they were still suffering from a World Cup hangover. And I know like the French clubs have been playing really well, but as a collective, I mean, it was real like obvious afterwards as well in the press conference, like the questions and the type of questions that were being asked of Fabien Galthié. He is a man under serious pressure, even talking to someone who's based in France today. There's a lot of the big kind of talking heads in France coming out, speaking against him as well. So for Ireland to go, I suppose, and bounce back from that World Cup quarter final. I mean, it was always a bit of the unknown. How were they going to play? But they just slotted in and didn't miss a beat with new faces. And that, to me, was the most impressive aspect of it. You got a new out half. You got basically a new second row. I know Joe McCarthy came on in the quarter final. You had a new winger. We all know how important the wingers are to the way Ireland play. And look, it wasn't perfect by any means, but God, it was just so, so impressive. And even watching it back a couple of times since, I was even more impressed every time I watched it back. So like you said, Will, they've kind of set themselves up now for another Grand Slam. I know that probably doesn't fit well with the psyche of Irish people, because it's not even being arrogant, it's just being confident that Ireland are
looking at the fixture list.
Looking at the fixture list, but also like what happened at the World Cup, like the narrow margins that Ireland were beaten on the night against the All Blacks, not to go over all old ground, but they didn't suddenly become a bad team because they lost that game. But still, it took a lot of mental resolve to pick up where they left off, and I thought it was exceptional.
What stood out to you? Like, why do you think Ireland were able to, you know, kind of bully France, put them to the sword? You know, a 21-point margin is crazy, considering going into the game, everyone expected it to be at least a one-score game, like, even if Ireland were to win.
I think the ruck stood out to me. I thought they were really, really aggressive there, and they managed to, like, I think McCarthy made a big difference in that he was able to have a few more of those carries, you know, that kind of, you traditionally might go backwards if there's two big French forwards coming at you. He seems to just even stand his ground, which actually means quite a lot if you can commit to, because oftentimes they'll be very aggressive in that kind of internal area, you know, kind of defenders 1-3-4, that kind of area, and they'll commit too heavily there, you know, to try and send you backwards, which is really great for a defence but awful for attack. And Ireland were able to kind of withstand that through some clever play as well. It wasn't just McCarthy. I thought the pack, you know, were brilliant and took massive pressure off Crowley throughout the game. And I thought that's probably one of the things that stood out to me. I think Ireland's creativity, like, look, I suppose I've been fairly consistent in that I wasn't harsh on Ireland after that New Zealand game. There was always going to be, like, I think the top four teams in the world, they're fairly narrow margins between them. And I still thought Ireland should have won that game, having had quite poor periods in it and some really bad moments against New Zealand. Like, kind of silly ones, the back of the line at that try, you know, and then obviously not finishing off the driving maul at the end. I mean, they're kind of two clear opportunities. I actually thought Ireland had more of that game. So I thought they dominated large swaths of that game, and I thought the same against France. And I thought that was what might transpire, because I think the team has a way of playing that if the game is anyway quick or there's kind of large periods where the ball is in play, Ireland are very, very hard to beat. That was always New Zealand's kind of trait, that just said, you know what, let's really avoid those long periods where the ball's in play. I think you have to avoid that against Ireland now. I think there's too many guys who are good at playing with the ball, at being in good positions, at exploiting space, too many ball handlers, rooking is too good, all the key things that you need to play that game. Ireland are really, really good at that. So I'd be avoiding that like the plague if I was playing against them. And I thought France at points couldn't control that against Ireland and looked really, really exposed, particularly if you go down, always against New Zealand as well, the great New Zealand teams, you go down a man against them, they really, really expose you. And that's what Ireland did at times. Now, on the flip side of that, so there were more elements, but I think I'm going to run out of time. We've only got an hour. But I do think the French defence was very, very poor. I mean, there were periods in that where they made some really rookie errors, and it didn't look like a Sean Edwards type defence to me. Like, there was periods when it did, but then there was periods when it really did not have any of the traits that you'd associate with him. Very, very passive, looked really, you know, the basic rules of that defence, like letting guys go through you. You know, I know we're going to talk about some of those moments later on in the show as we've discussed, but the Tadhg Byrne one, that's
Dunn,
awful defence. You've got three or four guys outside you, you know, and to let someone go on the inside of you there, it is a testament to those abilities that I talked about, the Ireland team having everyone in good positions, people making good decisions on the ball that exploit those holes, but still really, really bad mistakes you wouldn't expect from these kind of French players or the caliber of players. These are world-class players. So they were things I thought that France did poorly, but Ireland did capitalise on them. And as I said, to round off the point, they had more of that game. They were the better team.
The defence is a good point, like especially for that Tyburn try. Obviously, a kind of a systems failure at the end. Dante and Mavaka burned us goals between the two of them. But from the line out in the 10-metre line to the try, there was 9 carries before Byrne gets the ball. And as you said, like each time an Irish forward took the ball, they were making yardage. You just wouldn't, when you usually see a French team up against Ireland or Leinster in some of those big games, that's where they've really struggled to get that bit of purchase. McCarthy got the ball a few times, but those guys, Van der Fleer carried really well, Doris did. And I was surprised, as you say, a Sean Edwards defence and the French defence, which has been pretty good since he came in, was just allowing so much yardage from the Irish forwards.
Yeah, I thought the Dante, what would you say, attempted tackle on Tyburn, I know it was a systematic failure.
I think he looks like he makes a bad read on it to me.
He makes a bad read, yeah.
He's not getting out of the way of it, but like...
But it was just so jarring.
In his hands for a second, I watched the replay again. He just got straight on the
ground.
You
know what it is though? That's the quality of Byrne's line. Byrne's line is so good, but it's low as well at the back. It's a genuine option, you know. And Ireland can expose you there.
It's also Crowley scanning. If you watch back on the replay, you can see that Crowley isn't even looking at the ball at the breakdown of phase before. He's calling to Tyburn because he spots on the fringe that Mavaka is just too slow and falling across. So that helps create the gap as well. And I thought I know we'll get on to obviously talk about Crowley, but his ability to do that in that kind of environment I thought was exceptional, really. And
but that's the shape the team get in. So like I've always had a different view on that. I feel like that's the responsibility. Yes, he's got to pick the decision, and he did that really, really well. Lovely bit of skill. But actually, there's massive responsibility on other guys to get in position to do that. So like that's it. I think if you look at Ireland, they always get in good positions to do that. So that's why the reason I say that, because I always felt like as an outside back particularly, it was your job to spread the field, to create those scenarios for someone like a Crowley, a Sexton, to be able to pick the right pass at the right time. And I think that's where the decision lies. Now, of course, he scans, but the guys are in position there already. And I think this Ireland team do that really, really well. And that's why they're so hard to play in open play, because people are in good positions, giving good options, which take advantage of situations like that.
It's a sign, I was writing about this yesterday, to me that's a sign of how exceptional the Irish system is, that you have a new 10. I fully agree with the points that you're making. It's the animation off the ball with low out the back. But that to me is such a brilliant sign of the system and the coaching, as well as obviously the skills of the players, that you can drop a new out half into it and nothing changes. Yeah. Because if that's Johnny Sexton running that line, we're all going, wow, that was brilliant. But Crowley is doing it obviously in his first Six Nations start. And it wasn't just that, Troy. There was so many different aspects of the performance. Like each of the 5 tries came from the line out. Obviously the line out was a hugely positive source, which it wasn't at the World Cup. And you can see how much confidence Ireland get when it goes well. But it's the ability of guys to step in and out of first receiver and take the pressure, not take the pressure off Crowley, but to make Ireland's attack a little bit less predictable. And Ireland's attack hasn't been predictable for the last few years. But you think of Calvin Nash's try, it's Hugo Keenan who's stepping in at first receiver there because Crowley goes in. There's another time where Robbie Henshaw is stepping in at first receiver. Like all of these different guys being comfortable on the ball. James Lowe did it a couple of times off lineouts as well. We know, like Calvin Nash actually did it as well off another lineout. So all these different guys stepping in to take responsibility is such a, like I said, a brilliant sign of the system, but also how comfortable guys are, I think, at slotting in and out of it. And defences are still struggling to figure it out.
I was just going to say the same thing. That's the key element with this is that they spread the pitch well, but they also, against rush defences, you can see they have guys who have, they sit in a little bit tighter to the ball carrier, which gives them an opportunity to, yes, hide a little bit longer if you need to, but if you see that there's opportunity, you can go a little bit earlier. But also, it gives you the opportunity that if there's a guy coming in, they can still, and everyone can ball play. Everyone can ball play. That's the keystone that the team is built around, I think, is that everyone now on the team, 1 to 15 or 1 to 23,
I'm just going to say forwards as well. Yeah.
Everyone can pass the ball. So it means everything is a live option, which was always, I go back to this, and people will get annoyed probably, but it's always what New Zealand were so good at, is that wherever there was a space, the ball was able to get there. And they were able to expose any mistake. Someone taking a half-second break, they're tired from the previous ruck, they go, okay, I don't think the ball's coming, I can take a little break, or I don't have to get off the line with my team. And that's what France did at times on the weekend. and they got exposed badly because of it, because Ireland can get the ball there. And I think what I said about Crowley last week was that I didn't think he needed to have, like, look, he was always going to have a few moments where he was going to try things. And you do like to see that in a player, but there were some kind of big mistakes in international rugby there. We expected that, or I expected that at least. What I thought he did brilliantly well was he reacted really well to them. But also, his best moments in the game were where he fit in to the team, when he wasn't trying that. Because I think he has that in his game to have the special moment. But I think what will come to him over time is that the moment will present itself rather than him searching for it. And that's what you get. That's where you get to the Sexton level. It was where you're making way more good decisions than bad decisions. But he was good when he was fitting in, when he was using the international players around him that had got themselves in good positions, that were able to take pressure off him by taking an extra ball in, by being the extra distributor. And I think he's in a really good setup at the moment to really flourish. And I think he's got the personality to do it. And I think he's also got the physical abilities to do it. I was really impressed with him. I thought his tackling was really good. And even that ball, he has that ability as well to take the ball to the line and be a threat himself, which I think is something that might really work well for this team.
In a way, and I agree with you, he did make a few errors and everyone will remember them. The chip through, like, that was never really on. The crossfield kick, I mean, that was, it seemed like a breakdown in communication. But in a way, I really liked that he brought his own personality to it, because I totally agree with Luke. And I would say I'd be shocked if that wasn't the brief he was given last week. You don't need to be a hero here. Just slot in and do the basics well, which he did. But he was also trying to be himself. Like, he didn't try and come in and try and beat Johnny
Farrell,
Sexton.
Can I ask you that one? Do you think Farrell kind of says a little bit of that to him as well? I feel like he's a real, go and play, enjoy.
Well, Cavan Nash kind of basically said that after
Just when I hear you say it, I think
Kind of said, do what you've done today. Like, that's why I picked you, you know. So.
And the Cavan Nash thing is such, I'm glad you brought it up, Will. Andy Farrell did not have to tell us that in the press conference. He was just asked, oh, Cavan Nash did really well, didn't he? Explain, like, I'm paraphrasing. And he gave you this little insight I don't know if you didn't see it, Wills, or if people didn't hear it. Basically, like, Cavan Nash was really nervous all week.
Yeah, and he rang Keith Earls.
From what I heard as well, he maybe didn't train the best all week. And Farrell still had the conviction to pick him number one, but after the captain's run, he'd spotted that he was a bit nervous. And Cavan Nash, you know, they sat down and they had a chat, and he said, yeah, look, I am. And he asked him a couple of questions and he had all the answers. And he said, from then on, I just actually felt confident. But it's just goes back to that emotional intelligence of the guy, doesn't he? I mean, I would say a lot of coaches, if a rookie player wasn't playing well in training during the week, they'd be like, okay, maybe he isn't ready, we can just go there.
You can't pull a bunch of selectors.
It depends how late, I suppose, they selected, but you know what I mean?
There's a real feel to that.
Absolutely, there is. And like, I would say he did the same to Jack Crowley, you know what I mean? Just go out and be yourself. Don't be afraid to play your own game. And what a boost that must be for young players to come into that system, like you said, which is so well-oiled, but also to express themselves and be themselves. It's just hugely positive.
But there's lots of great players, Will, as well. Like, you know, if you think of, like, Sheehan has got to be the best in his position in the world, I think, if not very, very close. You think of Doris. Like, if you can't stop Doris, you can't stop Ireland, I don't think. He was outstanding. Everything he touched on the weekend, I was like, Jesus.
That counter up when he took two of the French players.
Unbelievable. But even it's the carrying, it's the extra yard he gets. It's a little bit of footwork. Mm-hmm. It's the ball playing as well. You know, that was no stress to him to throw that pass out off the Henshaw.
It was like the one last year against France for Ringrose's strike.
That was unbelievable bit of skill.
It kind of reminded me.
It was like a real awkward, like, kind of floater, but it was perfect.
And actually, I was sitting next to Rudd, and as that try happened, we both said, turned to each other at the same time, said, God, that was similar enough. Now, the one last year was exceptional, even better, the skills.
Very good. Like, and he's got great, that is the key point for him, is that I said this last week, Will. I think if he can just slot in, there's really good international rugby players around. It's not just good players. There's like guys who are like at the top of their game in the world there. So facilitating that will create its own opportunities for him. And I think the more he has in the position, I think the better he will get. He looks like a guy who's built for it.
And a lot of the good work that you both have touched on in the last couple of minutes was underpinned by the line-out and the kind of the re-emergence of it as a real weapon. Like, all five tries came from the line-out. Ireland were 100% on their throw. Obviously got some nice steals on the French throw, but also disrupted some as well. Like, you can't underestimate it, or not that anyone is, but how massive that is. Like, you know, Paul O'Connell was, I think, getting criticised for not getting criticised in the build-up to the game, but what a way to kind of get that back on track, because it was such a weapon.
It is, yeah. And like I said, so much of Ireland's good play and confidence clearly illustrated by the fact that all five tries came of it, came from lineouts. But the Irish lineout was under pressure. We had Dan Sheehan in the mix zone afterwards, and I asked him what I thought was a fairly...
asked him? Because I heard someone describe his answer, and I didn't know.
I thought it was fairly innocuous, he was denying that it was the problem.
It was a massive problem.
Did you watch the World Cup?
But in hindsight...
He didn't play some of the matches.
No, I don't think he did. Didn't he not? He came back in.
Yeah, sorry.
But the lineout had improved like a little. Like it wasn't.
He was like, not on my watch.
He was like, was it bad? And I was thinking afterwards, I was, because I didn't have this stat to hand that it was the 14th worst lineout at the World Cup, which is like a disgrace for an Irish team, really, when you think about it. Jeez. But so I didn't want to, after a great victory, like kind of throw that back in them.
They had to start going to two all the time. That to my mind, when I heard them defending the stats, I was like, oh, hold on a second here. Everyone knows that ball's no good. You know what I mean? Particularly for the backs. Like, it's really difficult to get anything going and it keeps them all in the game. Like, it looked way more decisive. It looked like they'd gone, all right, there was a lot of movement at the World Cup to me. They were getting red. It looks like guys weren't even moving positions. They weren't like they're shifting the opposition. It looked way more decisive on the weekend. And I wonder as well, did they regret some of the selections?
Of course,
definitely.
They did.
Not because of hockey.
That was well flagged in advance. I was saying this all last week, I just couldn't understand Moafana and Waki. And sure enough, I saw in Midi Olympique earlier that Waki, and I know obviously Vilhelmsa is going to be suspended, and Louis Brabourne are going to be coming in to start this weekend. So they're going to play the team that should have played against Ireland. To me, it beggared belief how they didn't pick Cameron Waki, like a struggling Irish lineout, one of the best lineout operators in the world. I just had no idea why they didn't pick it. They wanted to double down on the power game, but as we discussed, Ireland were well able for it. A couple of issues, obviously, at the scrum, which we can get into. But they got their team selection wrong, in my mind. And I thought they seemed to simplify the lineout, but they also had a different caller in Tadhg Byrne. They had Dan Sheehan, who I would agree is the best hooker in the world and fully fit. Obviously, he was coming back from that injury at the World Cup. And they varied it as well in terms of the options. Like Tadhg Byrne called the first couple on to himself. You got Joe McCarthy, who, you know, coming into the game, that was the one maybe area where I was, you know, wondering how would he fare against the French lineout, particularly if they'd picked Cameron Waki. But they used him at the lineout. Peter O'Mahony, obviously an exceptional jumper as well. And they stole four of Ireland, France's balls.
Tadhg Byrne got two key ones.
Exceptional. And there, you could feel the air go out of the stadium when things like that happen, you know?
What was Dan Sheehan's demeanour when he...
He was just surprised. He's like, was it bad?
What are you talking about?
He was like, then he kind of wore...
Gently combative.
Yeah. But I respect that.
It was bad. I don't respect him blindly saying it wasn't bad when it was 14.
I think he just didn't want the book to stop at him because he was injured for a lot of World Cup, which I had kind of forgotten at the time. But no, he warmed to task then. But clearly it was bad, but it was a big improvement.
One thing that also I thought was pleasing was obviously you look at the final score, and it did feel like Ireland were pretty dominant for the whole game. But at the same time, France cut it too.
Just before half time, I got a little shaky.
They cut it to one score then. But then Ireland score a try very early in the second half. But then, you know, they get that TMO given try, which looked fairly dubious. Yeah. That was definitely not a try, I didn't think. But then anyway, Ireland, that cuts it to 7 points again. We get Tadhg Byrne sealing a line out in halfway. Then a few minutes there, James Lowe holding them up in halfway. And from that scrum, Ireland ended up getting their bonus point try. So there were still moments that Ireland, I think, showed good kind of fortitude and kind of wrestling back the momentum. Even though I did think they were the better team for the majority, they still had to kind of a couple of key moments fight their way back into kind of an ascendancy.
Probably normal away from home in Six Nations as well, I thought. You're probably going to have a few of those moments for the most part. Not probably as bad a shake as Scotland has. But I thought they dealt with those really well. And actually, I think as well, Crowley deserves massive credit because I thought that penalty before, I was like, oh God, is he going to be nervous now standing off the other ones? Because he clearly should have got that penalty before half time. And then he got those two from the touchline, which I really thought that's a big time player to me. So that was class to see that, to see the bounce back there. So I think across the team, they had guys good, like, I say it again, like good players. They've like top class international rugby players playing on that team, like the best in their position, a few of them. And they kind of stood up in the key moments, which is what you really need. And I thought, I was really pleased for them because that was a tough game to go and deliver. And I think it kind of put a lot of things, like I've been saying that I thought Ireland like actually didn't do that badly at the World Cup and still should have won the game. Put a few of those things to rest in my mind. I thought they delivered on what I think this team is, which I think is a really great team.
You say that, but like one thing I definitely did consider as, you know, by the end of the game when Ireland had it well in hand was like,
why couldn't they have delivered a performance like that in the quarterfinal? Like, why couldn't they have been as efficient, as ruthless when the try-scoring chances came? They were 13-0 behind against the All Blacks before they started to play. They still made mistakes across the game.
But they still should have won the game, Will. And that was without a scrum and a line. So you're going to have those periods as a team where you're like, they're not going well for you. Like, and they
so
still,
you just think it happened.
I still think they should have won the game.
But you think that it happened to come in the quarterfinal. You don't think there's any reason?
No, I didn't think so. Yeah. I thought they battled through a really challenging period for them. There was, the referees clearly have a colour on our scrum. Like, they have a colour there. Mm-hmm. They were having trouble. Like, I thought it was nothing to do with calling or anything like that. It was clearly to me, or personnel, they were clearly having an issue with how they were strategically going about their lineout. That's what it looked like to me. Just lots of movement, looked clunky, I just didn't feel like it looked as decisive as it was on the weekend. I'd love to really talk to someone like a Quinlan, or I'd love to talk to Paulie even better and say, what did you change? What was the thinking on that? Because it looked
there's
like
nothing
teams
wrong
had
with the lineout. What are you talking
no,
about?
No, but yeah, but like, I'd love to know and go, look, what did you change? Because it looks like you've changed, like, strategically what you were trying to achieve there, and it really made a big difference. And I think I thought, despite all that, they showed their quality because they still should have won the game. Like, it was a one moment of like, oh, how did you not finish that? Like, it was a crazy moment.
I think it's a fair question to ask, though, because I know everyone is sick of talking and thinking about the World Cup, but I had similar feelings as I was watching.
It's an obvious question to ask.
Of course it
they
is.
They absolutely destroyed France in France.
One of the big things as well, which they got on Friday night, which they didn't get in New Zealand, and I would say has been a calling card for Andy Farrell, particularly on those mad run of wins that they got, was the fast start. And they didn't get that fast start in New Zealand, and I don't know.
But they didn't get it because they came out of the blocks very poorly.
I don't think that's like a quarter final thing. I think like
New Zealand started terribly as well.
But New Zealand were very good.
They were terrible at the start. Remember the first 5 minutes they were like...
We
gave away a few stinking penalties.
Well, they were 13 up after 15
But they played very well. They played very well in that game, New Zealand did. And like Luke said, Ireland still probably should have won the game. But like, I agree with your previous point about the mental resilience that they showed in game, but also before the game to bounce back, because like that took a lot out of the players because they put so much into it. And I think we saw the result of France and whatever Ireland put into it, France put so much because it was obviously on in France. And I think you could see that the players mentally weren't over what happened. So I think like Gary Keegan's obviously done a lot of work over the last couple of years in terms of the mental skills and that. And I thought the same, being in the stadium on Friday night, France came out after, and when Thomas Ramos missed that penalty, that was a big moment as well, because if he gets that, it's back to a 4-point game. Then you're getting nervous because you know they're going to have a purple patch even with 14 men. But I thought big leaders stood up. I thought it was interesting that when Peter O'Mahony went off, was substituted off after the sin bin, that it was Caelan Doris took on the captaincy. And he was the one at the very end of the game who decided to go for that fifth try when they could have taken the points and run down the clock even more. But I was having a look back in it yesterday. You can see the body language of France. They're out on their feet. They have loads of players down at their haunches. And Craig Casey actually runs on with the kicking tee. So I assume the call must have come from the coach's box. But Doris had already called to Carol Dixon that we want to go for the corner. And look, I love that. I mean, the game, I know the result was pretty much beyond any doubt at that stage. But like, this championship could come down to points difference in the end. And for him to go and to get two mall tries against the French pack in France, I know the game is over then, but that is like a serious psychological advantage for this Ireland team going forward.
We discussed the absence of DuPont and, you know, how obviously Lucci didn't play well. But he came in with good form and French were hopeful that he would fill that void. He obviously didn't. But, and we discussed this a few weeks ago, like, it really magnified the decision that I think is crazy, the captain of the team. Like, what kind of message does that send, and how big an impact that had? That he was like, I'm not playing the Six Nations. That's not my priority. I'm doing this Sevens thing. Like, that's a statement. That's
and then playing for Toulouse.
Playing at half and doing these unbelievable flicks, granted, but it's like, why?
Yeah. That made it worse, I thought, the fact that DuPont actually played for Toulouse. Because my understanding was that he was going to be away and like in Sevens training, and then you see him ripping it up. I was just like, how is this allowed? And we were discussing this off air. Look, you can understand why France, like, if Luke is going to be there for the whole thing, they want to get him the game time. But in my mind, opening night in Marseille, the toughest game you're going to have, if Andrew DuPont is in the country, Anton DuPont, in my mind, is playing.
But it does show, it sent a message.
In the time zone.
It sent a message to the Six Nations that it was just like, it wasn't a big deal. Like, you know, this defeat could be...
Just kind of, do it, Will. Just do it.
But it reminds me a little bit of Ireland against England in 2019 when, like, Ireland came in, obviously wasn't post the World Cup, but came in with the big aspirations of winning another Grand Slam or Six Nations, got destroyed, the team fell to pieces. Like, you were reading out some French media clippings earlier, like, they were already turned on Galtier, yeah, like some big person. Personalities in France, like Philippe Saint-André, and a few other internationals already kind of questioning, you know, whether he's the right man to lead them forward. All of a sudden, and the captain is off chasing a sevens medal, which they won't win. They have no history in sevens. Mm. Like, they're going to be massive underdogs. So I don't know the whole thing.
Big fat paycheck though for DuPont. So
well,
fair he's enough. Getting a big one anyway. Surely, yeah. I mean, to my mind, it feels like it's kind of a to place that kind of lack of emphasis on an international cap, like a Six Nations, I think is really weird. I'm not going to lie. I think I don't get the sevens thing. I never have. I know it's worked pretty well for Ireland to have a few guys there. I don't rate it. Like 15s is 15s. That's where the real rugby's played. It's 15s. You know, that's where the, you know, people who end up in sevens generally can't cut it at 15s. And that's where the big money players are. That's where the reputational stuff is. That's where your legacy's built. Not going to be on sevens. And as you say, France have no real history of doing that. Yes, they're hosting the tournament. But I won't watch it. I don't watch it.
I like the sevens, I have to say, for what it is. I mean, for the big events. And
it's like beetroot. To
be fair, like, I mean, the guys who aren't in the kind of limelight, the Irish guys, I mean, the amount of work that they put in for.
I'm not having a go at the work. I'm just saying they can't generally cut it at 15s.
Yeah. Yeah, I think some of them, though. Yeah, I don't know. I think
can you name one who can? Who has? I can't.
Who cut it at 15s?
Who's cut, like, who. Have you named someone who's ever gone from 15s to 7s, like, and like really flourished, or it's
it'll be interesting if any of the Irish guys will. I'm not going to rabbit hole of that. Like, Nusafour is obviously green lighted one player from each province. So
we don't want to kind of go off topic completely.
We're really gutting the 7s. Yeah. I really don't want to do that, but I just think it's
I think he's a team captain. Just like, you know, post World Cup, I would have thought he should be front and center of a re-energize.
It's a Six Nations. Yeah. Am I going crazy? Like, this is Six Nations. Like, this is huge. This is massive to me. Like, this is your bread and your butter of being an international rugby player in Europe, is that you play Six Nations games. I just can't believe that you wouldn't want to be doing that. Doesn't compute for me that you'd be going off to play sevens. Like, that's like airy fairy stuff to me versus the hard, like, rugby is about Six Nations.
Yeah, like, I would be interested to know, you know, you read a few clippings earlier, like, what do the French supporters think? Are they like happy to see him playing sevens? Do they want to see them win a gold medal, or are they like us, kind of scratching their heads being like why is the team captain not involved? He's involved playing for Toulouse, doing outside the, you know, behind the back flicks at out half.
Is there going to be 80,000 people packing out? I know it wasn't.
Yeah, there will be. Yeah. Yeah. I know 100%.
The tickets are like gold.
Oh yeah, tickets have been sold
for a seven.
Oh yeah.
Stade France. Just because it's Olympics.
Like,
it's
Olympics. Yeah, that'd be sold out. 100%.
They've sold out for ages.
Yeah. To go back to the game, one of you mentioned Andrew Porter earlier, and how like it's funny we did the thing before the World Cup. Like, who's the player you could least afford to lose? A lot of people said Porter, but like referees have decided almost en masse that he is an illegal scrummager, and it's a massive issue for Ireland at the moment.
It is, yeah. I don't know if you saw BJ Botez.
I did.
Like, look, to be honest, I mean, I'm going to speak for myself. Like I don't know what goes on in a front row in terms of the intricacies. And we were talking to Andrew Porter about this a few weeks ago. It would have been kind of a couple of months after the World Cup. And he was saying there's times where he's watching a scrum and a ref could give a penalty, like on TV or whatever, and he doesn't know what it's given for either. So to me, it's a big issue in rugby, trying to attract people. Like if you've got someone who doesn't really watch the game, watching on TV, and a penalty is given and commentators are struggling to explain why that is, like, that's not a good look. But the Porter issue, to go back to BJ Botha's clips, he maintains that Porter was hard done by. So if a guy like that... At one of them. So if a guy like that is saying it, who is like a scrum expert, like, that's the only stuff that I can go off. Mike Ross has been pretty strong on this as well. Like, these are like the epitome of scrum nerds. Alex Corbisiero was another. So,
but like, why? I just don't understand if they're all saying why would different referees across Europe and the world all be thinking the exact opposite?
Because coaches are obviously in their ears, but it's up to Ireland to change that, as in off the pitch. Because obviously you get like Andy Farrell will have a chance to talk to the referee this week. You'll get a chance to put different messages across. Joe Schmidt obviously was a big kind of advocate of that, and it's perfectly entitled to do it. So I would say opposition coaches are coming loaded with clips on Andrew Porter, whether it is legal or not, but they're portraying it as he is illegal. So to me, it seems like it is a bit unfair, because there's no way you can't have Andrew Porter in the Ireland team, because I've seen the kind of argument that, Ireland should change the picture by bringing on Cian Healy earlier or whoever is on the bench. But that's, to me, not feasible.
He's an unbelievable player. Yeah, exactly. I don't get, sorry, the one thing I thought that was interesting was that about Botha's analysis. There was more than one thing, but one of the things I found very interesting was that the referee seems to be on the wrong side of the scrum making the call as well. I can't see how the referee's making the call that quickly. Based on a touch judge, who could be 20 or 30 metres away.
Which would make you think it's a perception.
One of the penalties, for sure, Dixon gave a reset and then it came in his ear from the touch judge, and then he went for a penalty
from so far away.
Would you say that's kind of good enough? I would say, like, if that's an area where...
Well, this one was quite near the touchline, so the touch judge is looking right at it.
Okay, well, fair enough.
There was another one.
I don't know if that's the BJ Botha one, to be fair.
As well, the Cian Healy one, apparently, in the second half, apparently was quite... And I, at the time watching, I was like, oh, we look like we've got a shove on here against a pretty heavy pack, so I remember it. And Botha also said that looked like a penalty. Now, Conan did lose the ball at the back, I think, or lost control of it at least. And I think maybe that might have taken away from it. But there was other ones where you're kind of going, look, that looked pretty clear, like that might be a penalty. So whatever's happening in there, they don't seem to be getting the rub of the green anyway, and certainly seem to have... the referee seemed to have a raised awareness of it, and it doesn't seem to be working in Ireland's favour. So I agree with Cian. I do think that they do need to find a way back onto the good sides of the referees, whether that's changing technique or whether that's getting in before the game's then here. We're seeing this. You need to tell us how we can fix this. Not how we can fix this, but what you're seeing, and give us an idea of how we can fix it. That's I think needs to happen, because it's not like those players are too good to have this kind of issue, and they're too strong. It's not like they're young props now. You know what I mean? We have like experienced props. They'll have a sense of what's going on in there. And I think it doesn't make sense to me, and I'm sure it doesn't make sense to them, why it's been consistently viewed, you know, to be an issue for Ireland. I don't think it should be.
Like, it could end up costing Ireland, you know, a massive game. Like, I think back to the Twickenham game a couple of years ago. I think it was Reynal, wasn't it? Who was the ref? And he apologised afterwards. But that's no good.
That was like five scrum penalties, aren't they?
But that's no good if Ireland end up losing that game. So I remember at the time, John Fogarty, who's the scrum coach, was saying, because in the first test in New Zealand, the scrum didn't go well at all. And you were kind of going, okay, have they learned their lessons? Because they speak a lot about, you know, there's no point in the coaches showing you on a Tuesday or Monday morning in the review, oh, you should have done this, you should have done that. If a referee, particularly the French ones, make up their mind early on, if the onus is on you within that game to change your technique. But that's obviously easier said than done. If you're Andrew Porter, and if you feel like you are scrummaging legally, I'm trying to put myself in their minds. How do you adjust yourself to go, okay, I'm going to do something differently, even though I feel like I am scrummaging legally? So it is a big issue.
But like, it's not as if every penalty being given against them is incorrect.
No, I'm sure. There's probably dark arts going on.
It doesn't look like it's being, it looks like it's like, if, is it 9-1? It looks like it's around that kind of area. Will. Maybe it's 8-2, right, but it's certainly not, 50-50.
No, but like every referee can't be wrong. Like.
No, but is he 50? Like, well, no, sorry, maybe not. But it doesn't look to me like people who are watching the game who do know or think that he's wrong as consistently. So it doesn't look like the balance is right there somewhere. And like generally, like if you just think about him as a player, like it doesn't seem like something. Particularly, he's like 30 or 40 caps in at this stage, isn't he?
If not more. 50, or, think,
is he 50 caps in at this 50. Stage? You know, he's not like a young prop anymore. Scrummaging isn't going to be this kind of issue for him to kind of to have to figure out. And I just feel like something's wrong there. Whatever message they're getting across, whatever message they're not getting across, seems to be an issue.
I wonder, would rugby ever end up in a situation whereby, you know, because the clips with the spider cam from above, you can really get a good sense of angles and people like changing their binds and things like that. I wonder, would there be a sort of a TMO who's almost like looking at this.
So because, complex.
So complex. You don't get the spider cam, obviously, in every stadium. But when you do...
But like, you need a prop there every time.
But that's what I mean.
Oh, sorry.
It could be a job for BJ Both and Mike Ross.
They're not busy enough as it is, but clearly not with all those videos they're putting up. But yeah, like it is a
But
funny
they're so
one.
Helpful, though. They're so educational for like even people like myself, like, you know, who's trying to understand what's going on. They're fascinating insights.
Yeah. One thing I'd ask you about, you know, Kieran Frawley obviously picked on the bench. It was a 6-2 split, so he was there to cover, you know, the whole back line basically. But he only came on for 1 minute at the end. You know, we had Ron O'Gara obviously on last week. He was saying he saw much more of, like, you know, Crowley 50 minutes, Frawley 30 minutes. Mm. I would like to have seen Frawley get a bit more game time. Like, obviously, Jack Crowley deserved to start the game and battle back into the second half really well after a couple of first half mistakes. But I would like to, I don't think he's at a stage where he should be playing 80 minutes, which is what he did, and not giving one of the other out halves a chance. Like, they're all young, they're all battling for supremacy. I think Crowley played well, and maybe 65 minutes. I would like to have seen Frawley get that bit of game time. I know maybe Andy Farrell was mitigating against a late injury in the back line, but at that stage, there was a 14-point margin, there was like 10 minutes to go. I would like to see Frawley given 10 minutes at out half to run the back line.
Yeah, I probably would have too, but I do think there is a case to say, you know, you don't want to end up in a situation where you're kind of like New Zealand, where you don't know who your number one 10 is. Now, they might have said they figured it out, but I really don't think they have. And Beauden Barrett consistently always says, I want to be whatever they call it, first 5-8. But he always wants to be in that position when he comes back from Japan. He's quoted as saying that because he's just signed that new contract, hasn't he, up until the next World Cup to play in New Zealand. So, look... You wouldn't want to end up that way. I think sometimes you do have to nail your colours to the mast on it. You know, England have had the same issues as well with, you know, Ford and Farrell over the last couple of years. You know, so part of me thinks, you know, you have to give Crowley the time in there, let him settle in. He's got to feel the good and the bad in the game. Can't be coming off on 50 minutes, having done a good job and not feel the pressure in the last 30. So I'm torn on that one, Will. You also don't want to end up in a situation where you only have one guy who can do the job. So I think maybe Italy is probably a good opportunity to get that 30, 35 minutes in for him. And it'll be good probably for Crowley if he has a good 55 minutes or whatever it is, 45 minutes even. And you just say, you know what, get him off the pitch now. He's felt 80 minutes in, you know, against France. You know, we can save his legs here. He's still, you know, he's got enough experience under his belt. He's got a second game under his belt. He'll have felt what it feels like in a really, you know, tense environment than one where maybe it's a little bit looser this weekend upcoming, you know. So I think now is probably the good time to get Frawley that time. But I would be thinking of getting him a good portion of the game. Like, that will be important, even if it's in the balance, I think.
Yeah, like, I didn't have an issue with it, I have to say. I think time in the saddle, I think it's quite clear that Jack Crowley is going to be Ireland's 10. I think all things going well for the next few years. And I think time in the saddle in an environment like that is so important. And you hit the nail on the head as well, Will. It was to mitigate against an injury because Calvin Nash went off injured, which kind of gets forgotten about a little bit. And Hugo Keenan was the one who went to the wing and Kieran Frawley went to fullback. So when you go for a 6-2, you obviously lessen what you can do. But I would agree... I would be surprised if Ireland, I would expect them to pick a similar enough team this weekend, and I'd be surprised come 50, 55 minutes if they weren't comfortably ahead. And that could come back to bite me, but that would be an ideal opportunity, I think, to get Frawley half an hour or whatever it
but
is.
But do you think it should be comfortable ahead? This is probably where I'm thinking that maybe Ireland have made mistakes in the past where they've kind of gone, oh no, the game's in the balance, we can't trust the guy. Like, I'd be thinking, do you know what, like, let's roll the dice just a little bit. And that's not to say I'm not placing importance on the game, but I think you have to trust your guys. And I think...
You do, you know, but it's a new 10 though, so you want to get
no,
him...
Yeah, but do you know we're brilliant at that? Nienaber is brilliant at that. Mm. Like, they will whip you if it's not feeling right, or even if it's going well. Like, say the guys in their pack, like Etzebeth comes off on 50 minutes, you're going, he's the best player in the world probably. You know, now I know they're bringing on great players.
Actually being dumped by James Lowe.
No, but you know what I mean? Like, I feel like they trust, they pick their 23 and they go, we've got 23 top guys.
And Leinster haven't done it over the years, to be fair.
No, but they've looked like they've started. Yeah, they did it over La Rochelle. Yeah. I thought it was a really big thing for them. They were able to, you know, they trusted the people that they had on the pitch and then they trusted the bench. Mm-hmm. They trusted and they said, you know what, this is in the balance. We're 2 points behind. We're 3 points ahead. Bring on Frawley. See what he can. See, can he do it? Like, he's a great player. Like, he is a great player. Bring on Byrne when he comes back into the fold. So part of me thinks maybe it will be a good time to trust what we have.
Well, I even to that point, I was surprised. I don't think Ireland made a change until like the 62nd minute. Like, so after all the talk of 6-2 and the power off the bench, like, I thought they actually should have went to the bench a bit earlier because France had gotten back into the ascendancy. I think they'd cut the gap to 7 points at that stage. I was surprised that after all the Like, there was a lot of good players in that bench. Conan, Baird, Ryan, Kelleher. Like,
Ryan and Conan had a big impact.
I would have liked to see them five minutes early. It doesn't seem like a lot of time, but the reason you stock your bench with all these forwards.
But they scored two.
What's the point in doing it then?
They scored two tries, like, in the end. Like, I mean, I were being a bit too nitpicky here. I thought the bench had a good impact in Ireland, pulled away in the end.
You have to be nitpicky. It was a great performance.
Well, that's the thing. Like, the thing about, like, I'm not saying they didn't trust Kieran Frawley or not giving him more game time, but one of the big conversations afterwards amongst the press pack, I suppose, over the weekend was, you know, should Jack Crowley have come on in that World Cup quarterfinal? Not to go back to it again, but that was another example of maybe Ireland not trusting their guys. Now, I know you had Johnny Sexton and all that, and not to go over all ground, but he sat in that bench for 80 minutes, and a few months on, he's propelled and he's the main man. So to round that point off, I can understand why the Ireland coaches are keen to get him as much game time as possible over next year.
That's the thing, like, he wasn't good enough for a minute against the All Blacks, and now they're saying he should play every single minute now. Like,
what? Not every minute.
You have no choice now, but yeah. Also as well, like, I think
there's also 10 minutes.
And there is an argument as well to say that giving people 80 minutes of international rugby is very important. I know Roger's saying, like, there's a new world out there whereby, you know, you're thinking of the game, like, you're thinking of two people filling it. No, but you think about 80-minute blocks, and you're thinking about, okay, well, that's a two-player position, or that's, you know, he kind of had a different sway on that, yeah. I thought, which was very interesting. But part of me also thinks that you need everyone to be able to play 80 minutes. And it is, like everything in life, the more you practice doing the 80 minutes, the better you get at doing that, you know, and the fitter you get, because, you know, you cover extra meters every minute you cover an extra, like, kind of 5 to 10 meters or something versus, like, Heineken or Champions Cup. So part of me thinks those things are good for you to do 80 minutes as well, particularly younger in a career. But when you know someone can do it, I think maybe there's definitely an argument to say, well, let's get someone else on so they can feel the heat. But it's an interesting conversation we're going to have over that.
I don't feel that strongly about it, to be fair, either way.
You do, Will.
I do. No, but it was something that I considered. I was like, he's on the bench for a reason now. I know he was there in case there was an injury, as we said, that, like, he might be needed.
No, but certainly in the forwards, you're making a good point. Yeah. Like, you
forwards,
wonder, like,
absolutely. Like, that's,
and they're good players. There's Lions on that bench.
That's the point. You have Conan and Ryan, who can really beef up that back five of the scrum, and, like, they were good when they came on. Yeah. I just would have thought, after all the furore about picking them, you'd go to them at 55 to really start.
I can't think of the minutes around, you know, from that 55 to
I don't have a clear picture. Might have played a part potentially.
It's true.
When he came back, but see, I need to go back minute by minute and stuff like that. But it just struck me. When are they going to the bomb squad? What's the point of doing it? You're not going to kind of spring them all.
Yeah, because you don't have to just match what the others do. Do you know what I mean? Sometimes you're always thinking, okay, well, they've got, what have they got on their bench? We bring our guys on at the same time.
Yeah.
Whereas part of me thinks that maybe you could be a bit more proactive with it. But that's the nitpicking.
Ultimately, it was kind of like, well, are we going to take off Doris, Sheehan, Van der Veer? They're all playing
class. They're on fire.
They're all on fire. Like, but so I used to South Africa's point, they did that.
They now, go on attack.
See, I don't always know if it actually was why they won in the end. You know, I think they were, like, as you said, taking that a bit off after 50. Is that why they ended up winning some of those games? I would argue maybe not, that it just coincided with their victory rather than propelled.
Yeah, but I think the argument is always going to be that a lot of it can be in the unseen stuff. Do you know, like, when forwards are, like, driving their legs into the ground in a mall or things that, you know, definitely haven't someone
coming on. And
they're
doing readings, aren't they? Like, they have, like,
it's all being monitored live. So if they see someone's numbers or whatever, flagging them, they're gone. Yeah, so that's the stuff we don't get to see, yeah.
Yeah. We could talk about the Ireland game all evening, but I just wanted to touch on some of the other matches. Scotland Wales obviously was, you know, hilarious, exciting in equal measure. Scotland.
I think I'd rather ask you a question about this. This is really built for you. I mean,
It was mixed emotions. Scotland were the last team in my accumulator, but also the comedy of them losing. It was a Sophie's choice for me. So ultimately, I think I got to have the hilarity and a bit of money in my back pocket. But what do you make of that? Like, never, you know, what we were saying, Johnny Sexton, we lost but we won. This was like, we won but we lost. Like, as in, they got they ended the drought. They finally won in Cardiff. You know, they can go into France with a win on the board and potentially build, but God, like, to almost throw it away from that position. Like, what do you make of how it unfolded?
I don't know. There's mentally something there that's, I know, I saw John Barkley going at Ian Madigan. I think it was Fiona Hayes, and I don't know who else was in studio.
Madigan and Yara.
Yeah. They were in studio. I think they had a bit of a cut off them, which I think is fairly justified. I was kind of surprised he was defending. Like, he kind of said, oh, this is outrageous or something like that in a tweet when he saw the quotes. Now, they're very concise quotes, and I'm sure there's a bigger discussion, but still, he came out fairly strongly.
What does John Barkley want him to say? Like?
To my mind, that's what I was thinking. I was like, how are you kind of defending this? It was like a complete collapse in the second half. They're disciplined. happen. Like, you know, just fell apart. And once you do that, like, Cardiff is a funny place as well, though. Like, they're so passionate about the rugby and the game can turn. Like, I've played some great games there, but it has turned on like a sixpence, you know, some moment. And momentum is fickle in sports, but particularly in Cardiff, for whatever reason, they have had some teams where you're going, we are definitely a better team than these guys, but they are playing out of their skin here and so cohesive and together and the noise in there. So knowing that, and those, a lot of those players have played a lot there, knowing that those things can happen there, you would have thought they would have said, well, we need bloody 15 on the pitch at a minimum for the whole thing just to close it out. So they made it a lot shakier than it should have been after a brilliant first half performance. And I think it's a pretty average Welsh team, if, and that's very, been generous.
That's been generous,
yeah, I think. I don't know. I was surprised to hear any kind of defence of that performance. They should have been caning themselves, having done all the hard work in the first half. So it was... Was it surprising? I don't know. Probably haven't given it that much thought. I think it probably isn't when we see what they delivered, I think, against Ireland, particularly in the World Cup, you know?
Oh, I just like saw, it's like Hugh Jones calling like, we can go on and win the Grand Slam. I'm just like, oh, Hugh.
Like, not like that.
You were playing in the weekend. And I don't know if you guys saw Finn Russell's interview afterwards, where he like really was like...
Kind of criticised his own team, which is unusual.
Kind of. He was like, I was telling them what to do, they just weren't listening to me, like my great plan. Like, don't go into the ruck. They were going into the ruck. Like, some guys need to have a long, hard look at themselves. That's like,
Do you know what?
Pot kettle black, the man who goes off script the whole time.
He's probably never listened to a coach in his life. It's all of a sudden like Gregor said, this and we should be doing
I did
that.
Kind of like it though, I have to
so
admit.
Do I.
I kind of like
there's
it.
No point, there's no point pretending that exactly, like, the drought is over. That was a very, very abject second half.
And like, he's a new captain in the role, like he's trying to like stamp his authority on it. And I know it is, a bit rich coming from him, but I liked it. I liked it in no harm.
It needs to be said.
And you can be sure.
And he was right.
And if he said it publicly, you can be sure what was said in the dressing room behind closed doors. So it was such a... like a mad game. That would, like, if you had offered Scotland a win in Cardiff, they obviously would have taken it, like, if even if it was a 1-point win, but not in the manner
mentally
that they
had. It could be exactly what they need. If you think about, like, so they could have come out of that thing thinking, oh, we pumped Wales in Cardiff, 30 points.
If that had finished 27-0.
But crawling out of there with a point win, you're kind of going, this could be the perfect thing for them, where they go, do you know what, let's hang on a second here. Maybe we actually do need to have a look at some of these issues that, that we're having in the big game. So could
that's
work
definitely
out
a glass half full approach, because I would think that these issues are...
Hey, trying to play devil's advocate here, Keane.
To the Scottish listeners, like to offset Will's...
We can't cane them. We've got them in the last match. This could be crucial that they're coming in overconfident. Or angry. Oh, I don't want them coming in angry.
That last game, But like Scotland-France is now really fascinating this weekend. Like, will there be a massive kick in France? Because I could see, like, the big kick in France, but I could also see like their campaign disintegrating and Galtier, you know, getting even more abuse in the French press. And I really don't know how to call this one this weekend. It's set up to be a cracker.
I think they'll just have too much for that Scottish pack, won't they? But yeah, look, they are traditionally can be quite tempestuous, we'll say, with this, you know, that French mindset, and they can kind of go from one extreme to the other. Possibly we might see a period where they you know, are a bit challenged, particularly with that half-pack pairing that I've kind of built a lot of the success on not being around for the tournament, I think. So, will they flip-flop with selections? Will we see some of the old things that have happened with French teams that have caused them to, you know, not deliver on the unbelievable potential that they have? I suspect not. I think they get this thing right. I think Galtier settles the ship, and I think the quality is too much for this Scottish team. But stranger things have happened. Scotland have caused them issues. They caused them issues just before the World Cup started, albeit not a full French team. But this isn't a full French team either. So, a fascinating encounter coming up. And if Scotland can get their head right for, well, at least 60 or 70 minutes and not just 40, they'll be tough to beat.
No, because like if they win this game, they have a week off, then they have England at home. Like, you know, there is a path for them. Certainly to get to the Aviva at the end with the chance of maybe potentially winning a Six Nations, they definitely won't. But like they could conceivably get to that path. The England-Italy game as well was an intriguing one. Like I've been enjoying reading the English coverage of like the new England. Like their smallest ever winning margin over Italy has been heralded as this new progressive England, which I just find it hilarious. Like defensively, they were at sea in the first half. Now, obviously, they're betting in a new defensive system with the new defense coach, Felix Jones. We all know that. But still, I don't think that excuses like how ridiculously poor they were defensively. And they did try to ball around a little more. But at the same time, they were playing Italy, who conceded like almost 100 points, was it, to the All Blacks, and also got, you know, absolutely destroyed by France. Like, so I don't get the positivity. Stuart Barnes was the only one who called it out the way I described it there, the way I saw it. Everyone else seemed to be just much more positive about it. What did you make of it?
I think we should give Italy some credit because they were awful at the World Cup. Yeah. Like, so, so disappointing. And you think of all the good work that they've done over the last couple of years, and it just came to nothing, obviously, at the World Cup, albeit in a tough pool. So they deserve credit. Obviously, they've got a new head coach. I thought some of the tries they scored were very good. Clearly, England's defensive system is... Yeah. a work in progress, and it's going to take a while because Felix Jones has brought in the kind of the Springboks mentality. Interesting seeing actually Gerry Flannery has obviously been announced today as the new Springboks defence coach, which is an unbelievable move for him. So I don't see on England, I'll believe it when I see it, that they're going to move in a new direction in terms of their attack, because I was fascinated to see it. It's so unfortunate that Marcus Smith got injured, because I was fascinated to see how were they going to use Marcus Smith, who's been very good again for Harlequins. We're still waiting for that kind of form to translate to the test stage. Does it translate to the test stage? But was Marcus Smith going to be asked to, a bit like we were talking about Jack Crowley and Andy Farrell, you know, fit into the system but bring your own game to it while you do that? But in my mind, Borthwick is always going to be about that kick-heavy, like direct approach, forward-orientated. And that's pretty like what a lot of what England is about as well. So when Marcus Smith got injured last week, I was kind of thinking, this is probably a blessing in disguise in a way for Borthwick, because now he can go back to George Ford, who's fit again. Even though Finn Smith could end up overtaking Marcus Smith, he looks like a serious player and a little bit probably more like a Borthwick player. Like he
more
has,
like an English player.
Yeah, he has the X factor, but he's a bit more pragmatic as well. Look at the way he saw out the game for Northampton and Thomond Park. So
I do think though you do at some stage have to try to, I don't know, build a team around Marcus Smith. He's too much skill to not at least give it a concerted effort to. And fair enough, if after like a full season or two seasons he's not delivering at international level, then maybe not. But
he's kind of small as well, though, Will. He's small for international.
Finn Smith's small as well.
Ah, he's not that small. He's not as small as Marcus Smith.
George Ford is small.
Yeah, but that's always been an issue for him, in my mind.
I agree, they should definitely give Marcus Smith time. Absolutely. I mean, like, he's just so good to watch, and every neutral would say that as well. But
he's injured at the moment. He would have started.
But was he going to be started and asked to bring his own game, or was he going to ask to be playing the thing? So I'm waiting, like you, Will, to see this New England approach. Defensively, fair enough, but in terms of attack, I'll believe it when I see it under Steve Borthwick.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see how they get on against Wales this weekend. Like they're massive favourites in the bookies. I'm just like, what am I watching? Like,
that says more about Wales, though.
I know, but Wales are... will they be able to build on that second half performance? I just don't think they have the quality in their team. Team sheet. It wasn't as if it was a good team playing badly. It was a bad team playing badly.
Their halfbacks improved it when the replacements came
Jordan
on.
Yeah, Lloyd is a real dynamic, you know, ball player, but I don't know if he's a Six Nations level.
Thomas Williams, you know, played well when he came
on. And George Norley,
I
think, might be back for this game, which will add a bit of his experience into the back line, but it's a very callow looking team. Like, you know, and they're missing the good players they do have, like Jack Morgan, George Nord injured, you know, last weekend. So be interesting.
And they need them.
Yeah.
They need those guys. Like they're bare bones, I think, at the moment. And it's a little, to my mind, I think England as well, though, like, they don't look like, they lack the star power. Like, Marcus Smith is a bit of star power. You go, oh, he's special. But England have always had a few of those guys. And I just look at them and I think, where's the really exciting player? Like, you know, and I just don't see that at the moment. Tulagi has probably not been at his best, you know, for injuries.
He's done as a top player, I think.
Oh, Jesus. Well, I don't know. Yeah.
Like, he's just always, he's injured.
He's injured. I think the injuries are really caught up in him at this point. But he's still,
you're 33.
It's a very good point, though. There is, Marcus Smith is, you'd probably say, the poster boy, but he hasn't had time in the saddle to show that he is the man. Like, Itoje, you know, isn't the same player. So he signed a new contract with Saracens. I was a bit surprised. I thought he might go to France.
Answer me this. Is there one player, so if you had a Six Nations,
a Lions
1 to 15, is there one English player that starts for you?
No,
I don't think so either. No. Which I don't think I've ever said about an English team.
I would say a lot of English fans would even admit that. Like who? I don't even know who you'd be talking
Alex
about.
Alex Mitchell would be pushing, but Gibson Park is better.
I don't know if you could go further and say they wouldn't get in a Lions team, but I think it's pretty close. I don't know.
At the moment, there would no English player would start in a Lions test team.
Sorry, that's what I was thinking of. I wasn't even considering the French.
There's no way at the moment.
Not even when you think of it, there's not even one guy and you go, wow, like that really is an amazing thing to say.
Gange maybe, I don't know.
Not a chance. Who's he getting in ahead of? No chance.
Porter, he's penalty machine.
No, Porter's penalty will be, that'll all be sorted out.
But everything else around the pitch, he's so much better. I know he's a very dynamic carrier, Gange, but the turnovers, the tackling, like he's way better.
If Farrell was still playing, I think there'd be an argument for
10,
Farrell.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. No, but like 10, he's not, so... You don't think so?
That's the only one I could make.
That is a real, I think, like, that shows you where Welsh rugby's at, that they can't, that you're looking at them as not being bookies favourites for, or not even within, like, close to this English team who have been playing absolutely terribly. Now, you know, could the English team, like, I think they probably have to be fairly turgid, I think, if they want to be successful, which is not what they want to hear. And probably will not suit someone like Marcus Smith. But I don't know. Like, I think, like, do you know what? I feel like what was surprising to me in the weekend was that they had periods where the defence was brilliant, and you could see that South African element. But they had periods where I thought the one-on-one tackling, like, they just were so bad. Like, some of those tries that Italy ran in,
the one at the
really
end,
exciting, awful.
Yeah.
Like, awful.
I know the game was
stuff.
Done, but, like, still.
Basic
shocking.
Skills, yeah. Hands low, just getting handed off. Like, really, really basic stuff. Yeah. Not getting feet close to contact, head in wrong positions. Basic stuff for international rugby players, if I'm being very honest, you know. So I think Felix Jones is the perfect guy to get in there to try and change things. But it looks like it's a bigger job than maybe even he thought. So we wait and see if they can improve that part of it. Because if they can do that, and English teams generally can do that pretty well, you know, will they be able to turn things around and put pressure on other teams? They probably can. But at the moment, it looks like a fairly big job to get them back to being, you know, a very, very competitive and a strong team in the Six Nations.
Still a banana skin, Ireland going there. They're tweaking them, though.
100%, they'd be difficult to beat at home. No doubt.
100%,
yeah. And, like, you know, England will be, you know, their massive favourites. We said against Wales, like, that England-Scotland game, they could well be 3-3 each, or 2-2 going into a 3-3, and then, like, Ireland could be playing an England team with their tails up, so who knows? There's a lot of rugby still to be played in the Six Nations, even though Ireland are big favourites. Just before we finish up, you were the 20s game on Saturday night in Aix-en-Provence, the only guy to stay on. Fair play to you. Great win, obviously. To be fair, France were missing a number of guys who could play. They were playing top 14, like Tuilagi obviously was playing against Ireland the night before, but still, great. For, you know, it looks like another Grand Slam potentially in the offing.
Yeah, I was making this point in the match report, Will. I mean, to have two Irish wins in France in 24 hours is amazing. Mm. I mean, and it should never be taken for granted, because I think we're all so scarred from, you know, growing up. And
was it 30 years before Brian got the try?
Close to it anyway.
Like, we're also used to just being scarred when Ireland teams play in France. And they were exceptional, Will. Like, it was a brilliant game to watch. They got a bonus point as well. Just to mention a couple of guys, I thought Jack Murphy, who's the son of Richie, the head coach, his kicking display that he put on was
the one near the end was
amazing.
Dad was an unbelievable kicker.
Like, it's no surprise. I mean, you imagine the amount of hours that they must have put in together. But, like, I don't know if it came across on TV, but there was 8,000 people there, and they were booing and howling and hissing like mad. The classic kind of South France atmosphere. And for a guy who think he's like 19, to handle that was amazing. You had Brian Gleeson, who, look, everyone would have seen him playing last year, would have seen him playing for Munster. The guy is like a freak of a talent at this level. I was tweeting during the game that he looked like an overage player playing 20s rugby. He is the real deal. It's only a matter of time before he's the Munster number 8 in my opinion. And Hugh Gavin in midfield, a guy who played on the wing last year for the 20s, was exceptional as well. Looks like he's piled on a few kilos. Really powerful. Really powerful, strong in contact, and similar enough to Andy Farrell's senior team. It does open up a little bit now. England are supposed to be pretty good, and they're not going to have to play England over there, but they won a Grand Slam last season as well, got to the Junior World Cup final, so the future is bright. And what a weekend for Irish rugby, like I said, to have two wins in the south of France. It was amazing, and a privilege to be there as well.
Yeah, it really was a great weekend for Irish rugby. Not often you get two wins, not just one. And just before we finish up, guys, we're going to do the Bank of Ireland moment of the week on the Left Wing podcast. My one, I know we discussed a lot of these moments earlier, but it's worth going back over them again. Tyburn's try for me, you know, the 10 kind of phase set leading up to it, the carries were just, you don't see French team, or this French team certainly, put back on their heels the way the Irish forwards are punching holes. And then there's the lovely little pop pass from Crowley, and Byrne galloping through untouched as well as the defence parts. It was just a brilliant moment. And it kind of just rubber stamped their dominance at the time, putting them two scores ahead and, you know, set the scene for the second half. And Tyburn, I think we didn't really touch on him, you know, hugely in terms of his individual performance. You know, maybe struggling a bit for form post-World Cup. I thought he was back to his absolute best the weekend. And when he plays well, the whole Ireland team plays well. He's a real galvanising player, because his impact is always like big moments, like, you know, a huge steal, or, you know, big moment at the line out, or, and stuff like that. So delighted for him, and, you know, a really good try.
Yeah, I fully agree. We should have given Tadhg Byrne more credit than we did. Joe McCarthy seemed to get all the plaudits, but Tadhg Byrne was exceptional. My moment of the week was Calvin Nash's try. What I liked about it was it came at a time when France were enjoying their purple patch after halftime. Thomas Ramos had just missed the kick at goal. Like I said, it would have made it a 4-point game and you would have been really nervous then. But the character that Ireland showed to go straight down the other end of the pitch and for, like I said, about the multi-layered attack really came to fruition. You had Jack Crowley going in, clearing out a breakdown. You'd Hugo Keenan stepping in as first receiver. Lovely pass out wide to Robbie Henshaw, who did really well. And that little offload to Caelan Doris, who pops it in for Calvin Nash, who we discussed was really nervous all week. What a moment on your Six Nations debut to score a try in that atmosphere. And to me, that was the winning of the game. There was no coming back from that from France. And yeah, just a moment he'll never forget.
I thought he played well. He didn't get a huge amount of ball, but he had one really good carry. I think it was actually in the lead up to Tadhg Byrne try potentially, where he took it off a line out, you know, in the middle and made like 10 metres.
I thought he did well.
But he looks like, do you know what I loved about it? He looked like a seasoned pro. Yeah. Like he looked like a guy who, I believe he's a very hard worker and all that, great trainer and great shape and all that, but he looked like a guy who didn't overthink anything. He just looked, I'm good at this, and he did all the basics really well. I thought he played really well without having big moments really bar the try. I just thought he was really, really good, so I was really pleased for him.
He's a guy who, I was making this point a couple of weeks ago on a pod, I think it was with Sinead, that I think we underestimate guys who you think are gone to a certain level, but the next level they can kick onto when they get time in international camp with the likes of Andy Farrell, Mike Capp, Paul O'Connell. I think we can kind of forget that there are another levels, because look, we all know the freakishly talented guys like Joe McCarthy, Caelan Doris, the talent is obvious, but Calvin Nash has had to work so hard for everything he's got. Not that the others haven't, but wasn't fancied by Johan van Graan. He was talking about retiring because he was injured. He wasn't getting game time. And to, like I said, to have a moment like that himself was just exceptional.
And the funny thing was, I thought his impact might come in the air. Like, he's really good at, like, you know, getting the ball back and, you know, winning back.
He nearly did,
especially by picking Mafena. You know, I thought he might be like someone who might be getting on the end of some of those, but, you know, it didn't really materialise in the game. Luke,
he defended well as well.
Yeah,
really,
he's a good defender.
He's a good defender.
Strong.
And, like, that requires a bit of calmness and toughness. Mm-hmm. So he was that's great to see for him. My moment was actually a kind of different one. It was, and I could have picked two of these for Hugo Keenan, but I'm going to pick the Penaud one down the left touchline, because he's been unstoppable. I see Shane Horgan picked him as his, like, player, his favourite player at the moment in the Six Nations. You know, and I'm not surprised, because he's clearly been watching Bordeaux. Like, he's magic, and he's really, really slippery and hard to stop. They got a little bit of a leeway. It was our left hand side, their right hand side, obviously, where he's playing. And Keenan, he kind of tries to stand him up and go outside Keenan, and he gives a lovely little low tackle into touch. And I just thought, that's a real class player, because it won't seem like a massive moment, but it was a big moment to put him down there.
Underrated moment, like, because if they scored a try first couple of minutes, like, the atmosphere is completely different.
Well, the obvious one is probably the one where he gets the shot in the stones, and it was a huge tackle, but
I don't know, like, it was a bit dirty, was it? Like, when Penno kicks his leg back.
I actually didn't notice any of that. I missed it, to be honest with you. I was just thinking that was a great tackle, but
it was an exceptional tackle.
Unbelievable.
That kind of tackle is the kind of tackle where your teammates feed off that and go, they're not beating us.
I haven't mentioned that one, because the other one, there was a few minutes later where Penaud goes through. I was like, I just felt like it kind of took away from that massive tackle. But the other one where Ireland were kind of in the ascendancy, France looked like they got a little bit of leeway down that side. I was thinking, oh no, here's that moment that France run a month from 40. Chops him down, no big deal. And that's to my mind, is a guy you can really rely on. I think he might be the best fullback in the world. I love watching him. He's got everything to me. And I think the tackling was the last little bit for me. Never that he was not up for it, but I thought he made a few mistakes for Leinster a couple of years back, particularly the Roux try in the final. Do you remember that Raymond Roux try? He should have got it. He should have laid a glove on him at least there. But and I criticised him for it at the time. But he now, to me, is a polished player. He's got he's the full package. He's got everything. He's got the kicking game, the catching game, the tackling, and he's magic, obviously, going forward.
I'm glad you picked it as your moment, because he has become one of these guys who we don't probably focus a huge amount on, because you just expect him to be a 9 out of 10 every week. He is probably magic Ireland's most consistent performers over the last few years, and great moment.
I was very tempted to pick that Finn Russell interview as my moment of
the week. Probably should pick something in the game, but
the boss has reversed over all his teammates in his first ever, like, moment as captain. on BBC, on terrestrial TV, no less. But I think it speaks to the Irish performance. You know, we picked out three moments, so we could have picked out 10 different ones. And
that's the key fixture in the competition.
The key fixture, but you know, it was a real great way to kick off the tournament. I'd like to thank Keane and Luke for joining me on tonight's episode of the Left Wing Podcast. We'll have another show later in the week reacting to the Ireland team announcement for the game against Italy. And in the meantime, you can subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or listen on independent.ie. So until next time, thanks so much and goodbye.